Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we're talking to Mary Scurlock. Welcome, Mary. Welcome to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Sure. You know, usually I try to avoid getting into reading resumes, but one of the things I've discovered about this radio show is that I, because it is pretty informal, is that I'll get halfway in the show, and people won't know anything about the person I'm talking to. So if you just sort of give us a little bit of your background, sort of, you know.
Okay, well.
and you don't need to start at first grade. I mean,
fourth grade now.
Fourth grade would be good.
Well, I went directly to VCU after I was raised in Norfolk, and I wanted to go to art school, so I went up and was a painting major, which was a very useless degree, basically. I loved getting
right.
it, but when I got out of school, I realized that I would pretty much have to wait tables or do this and that,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to go to grad school. At the time, VCU was not really good at preparing the students for grad school. Which they've gotten much better at now. And so I was kind of playing around with the idea and thought, well, I'll move to New York and then go to grad school.
Right.
So I moved up to New York City. I had some friends living up there, and they had a place in an apartment. So it was like the big
How
commune.
How old were you?
At that time, I was 22.
22.
Yeah.
22 and headed for New York.
That's right. So... to go to grad school.
Right.
But I didn't do what, you know, you should do, which is apply before you move to the city. And
yeah, well, you were 22, so yeah.
Yeah, so I just moved in with these right. Friends that I knew that were going to Columbia at the time, and, you know, got a job waiting tables and got wrapped up in living in New York, basically, right. and making money to make ends meet, to afford my apartment, you know, and I was still, and, you know, I was a painter at the time because I had this painting degree, and that's what I considered myself, and was painting in my living space. I still kept painting, waiting tables at night, and realized that I couldn't really live with that smell and the fumes from the paint. So I thought, well, until I get a studio, which is sort of a joke because I
right.
never did have a studio and an apartment in New York, you know, I will go out and buy a drawing table. So I went out and bought this drawing table, and I was making these drawings, you know, every night and being very diligent or whatever during the day. And that's basically the reason I'm telling you that is because now I work on paper, and that's
yeah.
when it all started. I went from the canvas. Never applied to graduate school. Got
really?
Involved in working in New York and living there. Pretty much living in New York. I lived there for about 9 years. Was graduate school for
it's kinda
me.
Like, I was going to say, yeah, that's kind of like graduate school. You
yeah.
said something really interesting that that I want to talk about a little bit. You said I knew I wanted to be an artist. I think that's what you said. You said,
oh,
I knew I wanted to go to art school. How did that happen? What's that about?
You know, I wish I could answer that. And going back to fourth grade.
Yeah, we can. I mean, now we can go back to fourth grade.
Well,
were you an art kid?
No, my parents are very conventional.
Uh-huh.
I come from a very conventional family. I'm sort of an anomaly in my family. And in fourth grade, I remember telling my teacher that I was going to be an artist, and that's
really?
What I decided. And I never changed my mind. You know, I never varied from
that idea. Do you remember
what
sparked that? Was there anything that sparked it? Was there a visit to a museum?
No, you know, the only thing I could say is maybe my mother used to, you know, make a lot about my artwork, you know, and say,
right.
you know, very nice and put it on the wall. But, I mean, I don't know. Then
so
you start wondering,
right.
is this kind of thing predestined or what? I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so there was an urge to draw, to paint, to sculpt, to what? All of the above?
Well, never sculpture. I'm not very... 3D mm-hmm. is definitely not my media or where I want to go into. But 2D, you know, painting and drawing was always... that's what I did in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I went to VCU, after I got out of foundations program, you know, it just was natural for me to go into the painting department.
Well, let me ask you, because a lot of the show... I mean, a lot of the people listen, you know, make art. But I think people... who don't also listen. And part of the show is to try and bridge that gap. I was thinking about calling this show. I've said this about five times now, but think about calling this show. Well, I could have done that. You know, because people walk into art galleries and say, well, I could have done that.
Yeah.
But when I guess other people who aren't painters think about painting, I don't think we see paint the same way you guys see paint. I mean, it's like, what's the attraction? Do you know?
To physically putting something
to the painting. I mean, what is that? What drew you to that as opposed to watercolors or as opposed to, or maybe you did watercolors, I don't know.
Well, let's see. That's an interesting question. You mean as maybe opposed to sculpture or opposed to a crafts medium?
As opposed to someone who's not interested in it.
As opposed
to you can look at,
that I can't answer, you know, because I'm...
Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, the way my thinking is why aren't they interested? You know, why don't they want to physically do this? Because I want to physically do it, and it's just... But I guess this is, the analogy would be, like, I don't want to be an Olympic athlete or something like that, because that's not something I'm driven towards, you know. It's this kind of drive and this instinct that people have, you know. Now... Then you could say, well, then why does someone want to be an accountant? And that's just, to me, is totally foreign.
Yeah,
totally
exactly.
foreign. But people love it and people do it.
I know. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Is it something about the attraction to color? Is it the surface of the paintings? Is it the is there an idea that you work from in painting?
In my own work?
Yeah, in your own work. Where do you start? I mean, some people are more intuitive. Some people start with an idea. Some people just start and come to an idea. I mean, there's a lot of, I guess there's as many different ways of doing it as there are that people do it.
Yeah, there are. And nothing's right and nothing's wrong. Mm. In my case, it's very intuitive. I don't start with an idea necessarily. Mm-hmm. Since I'm work, I mean, really, my work can be described as painting on paper. You know, I never really left the painting, but I definitely, it's more of, I use paper, I layer paper, I use different materials, I mix media.
Right.
And so.
When you say you layer paper, for us that don't, what does that mean?
Well, going back to when I first started doing this, I was making these drawings on this drawing table I had bought in New York. And one night I was putting these drawings away and I literally threw one drawing on top of the other drawing. And I thought, you know, these drawings by themselves are not very good, but together they really worked. So
well, when
I
you threw it on top of it, was it translucent? Was it transparent? Or was it just next to?
No, it was literally on top of it. So basically, the one drawing took the negative space of the other drawing, but it completed that drawing in a better way.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
I think so.
And so I literally glued those two pieces of paper together, and that's what I've done now. In fact, when I started drawing now, a lot of times what I'll do is take a blank sheet of paper, but then go into all these other, you know, pieces of paper that I've torn off or, you know, manipulated at some point but never used, for example, and put them just as kind of a starting reference to get me going to break that surface. So that the surface is activated.
I was going to say, how do you get started? Because people walk in and it's like, well, there's that big blank piece of paper.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be a little intimidating. So that's how I do it. You know, I just sort of, and I'm not like, there. You have the artist that would draws and is very careful and, you know, the rendering has to be just perfect. You know, that's
sort of draftsman.
Yeah,
quality.
I'm totally the opposite of that. Very loose line, and you know, try to keep it moving.
Well, let me ask you something else, because it has to do with this. But it's interesting what you said about your family. You're very out of character with your family.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that difficult to make a decision to become an artist? Because in our culture, being an artist really is a very different sort of way of life, or can be. Was there tension around that? Do you remember making a decision about that?
Well, it's funny that you asked that. No, there wasn't. And I'm not really sure why my parents were so understanding of it. I think they were like, well, she's, it was like decided from day one that I would go to college. Definitely right. Education was very important. And so, I do remember one time my mother said to me, she said, well, Mary, you can always be an interior designer.
If all else fails.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I think she was thinking, well, you'll go to art school. We know that. And you can be an interior designer, and that way you can make a living.
Right.
And the minute she said that, I thought, there is no way I'll ever be an interior designer. I'm going to be a painter.
Yeah.
But I won't tell her right now. So, I go off to art school. They let me do what I wanted to, and it's all worked out. I must say, they were very different but supportive.
Well, talk a little bit about the journey, because I'm assuming the work you're making now is very different than the work you were making in New York when you were 22. What was that? Can you talk about that evolution?
I think the analogy there would be just like aging. It's a subtle thing that all of a sudden, you look at yourself one day and you think, oh, no, my skin's getting a little bit,
Who's that?
But it's such a subtle process, and this has been such a subtle process. I can see real similarities between the work I was making then and the work I'm making now. But it's a mature version, really.
Mm.
It hasn't changed drastically. I mean, people will say to me, well, why don't you go back to canvas? Why don't you paint on board? Mm-hmm. Because one thing, I do have the framing issue with paper. Should I just push pin it to the wall, or should I, put in a frame, which can be very expensive. But
why is that an issue for you?
Well, the expense is the issue.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Then, it's not just the expense. It's also the viewing it. Some people really do not like to view pieces through glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand that because you get the reflective quality that happens.
Right.
But then at the same time, paper, unlike paint, is more vulnerable to, handling and that kind of thing. So it's kind of a catch-22. And so I do frame my work. But I can't say that I never will go back to canvas. I mean, but I just don't have that desire right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of, when you say you paint on paper, what does that mean?
Really, mixed media would be a better way to
describe, talk about that. Because I'm not sure everybody knows what that means.
Okay, well, if it's a painting with just oil paint, then it would be, you would list it as just an oil on canvas. Whereas
right.
mine uses paint in a lot of ways.
Are you using oil-based paint?
No, I don't use oil-based paint because if I did, eventually these pieces would rot.
Right.
And the only thing I could hope is that, I'm not around if that happens. Because sometimes I wonder.
Please, God, let me rot before my work. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, well, thank you. It's really been a pleasure talking. What the hell is that smell?
I have to tell you a funny story. I was working in New York, and I stopped waiting tables. Well, I didn't stop waiting tables. I was doing two jobs. I was working in a frame shop.
Of course, right.
Knowing that I had to frame my work, I went and got a job in a frame shop. And
And
then I started selling my work through this frame shop, and that's another long story how that happened. But this fellow would come in, and he really liked my work, and he bought several pieces from me. And he was sort of my patron at the time.
Right.
And so I got a show, and it was going to be in Nashville, Tennessee. And so he had a couple of pieces I thought were really good. And it was like, it was at the Parthenon Museum down there. So I didn't really have to have everything for sale. So I thought I would borrow a couple pieces back. Anyway, one night I had this dream that I'm driving to Nashville with this piece with of his in my car, and it rotted on the way down there. So anyway,
that actually happened to Sally and I.
Did it?
For those of you who don't know who Sally is, that's my wife. Yeah, the first show she ever had in New York, we had a 1964 black Volkswagen I had painted flat black and put a big red heart on the front with an arrow sticking out of it. And for some strange reason, the state police thought they should stop us. I don't know why. And they couldn't find our registration in the computer. So here we are, right, getting dropped off in Bayonne, New Jersey, This is before Bayonne was, you know, anything other than just hell on earth. In the middle of the night, with armloads of paintings that we're trying to bring into a show in New York because they've towed my Volkswagen away.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, so I think everybody has sort of a dream or at least a story like that.
Yeah.
Selling your work. One of the things I think that artists have to deal with is, you know, why do I... It's important in our culture to be recognized. It's important in our culture, therefore, to sell your work. How much of an issue for you is that? And does it impact the work you make?
Good question. Yeah. Well, for me, it does not, because I am a teacher, and mm-hmm. that is my money,
so that's
my income.
That's almost freedom.
It is freedom, you know, and I have thought to myself, I would like to, you know, part of me really would love to teach part-time because I do love to teach, you know, so I wouldn't want to give that up completely and then try to make it as an artist selling my mm-hmm. work. But my fear is that I would, you know, either starve to death or... end up...
That would really suck too, yeah.
Yeah, it would.
She was really committed, man. Really. She, like, starved.
But seriously, or really give up the integrity of my work, because I would have to be making my work,
yeah.
you know, yeah. not because it was... Just so that I would just have to be making work to sell, and right. I would feel that pressure. So right now, I prefer the way it is.
Talk about integrity. What does that mean to you?
Integrity?
Yeah.
Well, for me...
As an artist...
It is basically not making work to please other people, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I don't have to because right. I don't depend on it, you know. But as you said, all artists at some point want an audience, and I do want an audience. Mm-hmm. I want people to see my work. I don't want to be sequestered and, you know, all of a sudden, you know,
right.
be dead and they find my studio.
With your rotting painting, yeah, okay. Yeah. I got to get past this. I'm sorry. You know, if you're lucky enough to make a living from your work, mm-hmm. and very, very few artists are.
Yes.
And then, you know, do you succumb to that pressure? Because, you know, I mean, face it, we live in a capitalist society.
Right.
Face it, the artists who get the most, quote, respect are the ones who are selling their work for the most, quote, money, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there aren't any artists in New York that sell their work for $3.50 a painting and people are raving,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there is that whole piece. But it's a double-edged sword. I mean, it can cut either way, and I've seen it with friends of ours who have gotten successful like that, and it is pressure.
Mm-hmm,
and
do you feel like they?
I think some people. It's like everything. Some people handle it very well. Some mm-hmm. people, I think, really have a hard time
mm-hmm.
with moving on, with growing,
mm-hmm.
because they've got something that's working.
Well, exactly.
I don't want to touch it. Don't want to, you know.
Well, yeah, and especially if it's, you know, feeding your family or mm-hmm. you know something like that.
Or then feeding your ego.
Or feeding your ego. Yeah, that's probably even more important for artists. Yeah.
Well, what about your process of evolution? What keeps you interested? What keeps you coming back to the studio? Has there been a journey for you? Is there some kind of experience that almost transcends words? I mean, I guess if you could talk about it, you'd be a writer, right? So,
yeah, well, that's true, you know, and a lot of times when people ask me, you know, what does your work mean and that kind of thing, I think, you know, do I need to explain that? But at the same time, I generally tell people, you know, they just need to take from it what they can get. And there are references in my work, even though it is abstract, to, mm-hmm. you know, images.
Like what kind of references? What are the things you're dealing with now?
Dealing with right now? Right now, I'm kind of on this memory.
Really?
Yeah. And not just memory, like in, you know, remembering something from the past, mm-hmm. but just the idea that we have this unconscious memory,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's also, you know, where intuition comes from. And I just started reading a lot about it recently.
Really? About
just sort of how how people talk about how our intuition works and where it might come, and you know, this whole terminology that keeps coming up in what I've been reading is cell memory. You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like saying, you know, the dog has instinct. What does that mean? You know, they can swim. They know how to swim. What does that mean? That doesn't. When you look at me and say, well, it's an instinct. It's inborn. Really, what does that mean? And you're talking about the same kind of, you know, this.
Well, maybe
this,
not instinct.
This, no, I know you're not saying instinct, mm-hmm. but it's sort of this mystery. It sounds like you're exploring.
Yeah, it's sort of like. Now this is really hard to articulate.
Yeah.
But let me see if I can do it. Like for my work, for example, for a while now, I break it up into these compartments, and I sort of see these compartments as reading, like tarot cards, for example.
Right.
And so I'm making this reading that maybe references something else, and I'm certainly, and sometimes I am thinking about something very concrete when I make a piece mm-hmm. of work, and then other times it's much more. Sometimes after I look at the work, I realize what it's about.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And so this is a mystery to me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. sure how that all functions within myself. And so, therefore, lately I've been reading some, you know, ideas around that. Carl Jung and mm-hmm. Memory, Dreams, and Reflections. And then some other people that talk about more about how maybe even our past lives.
Right.
You know, may affect that.
Right.
Like if you are doing something, it may be something that is so ingrained in your cell memory.
Well, you just wonder when you see somebody who's 8 years old who can play the piano, like yeah. someone who's 35, you just think, there's got to be, they must be, the Buddhist must be onto something. You know.
But, you know, at the same...
Or yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, at the same time, you know, it's... If you're making art, you really want to make it for your audience or for the you know, for whoever's out there that wants to look at art and have them relate to something. So
right.
hopefully it's maybe a universal thing as well, you know? It doesn't
exactly.
become so individual.
Right.
I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah. No, I think it does make sense. I think it makes sense that individuals make art, but that art that is appreciated by people has somehow some mysterious universal quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's not just because it's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, it's some, I mean, of course that could be part of it, but there's some other thing going on. Do you have any idea why you want to do that kind of exploration? I mean, most of us get up in the morning, go to work, come home, watch television, go to bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sounds crazy, but it's true.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Most people don't do what you do.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, they really don't.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, and it's sort of magical and mystical and interesting, and you kind of wonder why more people don't. But
well, I sort of wonder why more people don't. But at the same time, at one point in my life, when I was going through a period where it was like, why am I torturing myself doing this? You know, it's because,
oh, so it was difficult.
Well, yeah, it's not always easy.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not, you know, full
right.
of angst and, you know, downtrodden artist, but
you're not out there. Oh, yippee, I'm making art.
Yeah, you know, but at the same time, it can be difficult, and you're like, why am I, you know, doing this and going to this? So I decided to stop. I was in transition from New York, you know, uh-huh. coming back to Richmond, and it just was not a good period of my life. And I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to – why can't I just be one of those people that goes to work, comes home, watch TV,
right.
or, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so much simpler.
Right.
And it was not good. I was not happy. It just made me more unhappy.
Really?
Yeah. So
yeah.
I just thought, well, I can't fight this, whatever it is. So I went back to it, you know. And once I went back to it, it was like everything started lightening up again. And
do you find that it helps you make sense of your life? Or is that putting words in your mouth?
Makes sense of my life. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I make sense of it, or just it is my life. You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. I mean, I've talked to a lot of artists, and I've never had anybody say, "Well, let me tell you why I do this." You know.
I think when somebody can say that to you, then you have to question why they're doing it.
Well, I think that sort of the interview's over.
Yeah.
I mean, because isn't this all about the mystery? Isn't this all about the journey? Isn't this all about unfolding, discovering, chaos, not having the answers, not having everything lined up in a row, life is that. That really is life.
Well,
and so it's almost submerging yourself in that life process.
Exactly.
You know?
And I think that's the importance. And, you know, as a teacher, which, you know, I tell my students, you know, even if you don't ever make art again after this class, mm-hmm. at least you have appreciation of that process, and that process mirrors life, you know? And if you look at art and you look at what's happening right now with mm-hmm. artists and young and old artists. I just went to the Venice Biennale.
Oh, wow.
And what I was really struck by was how many artists were using that as a platform for a voice for how they felt about something.
Really?
And a lot of it was very political.
Ah.
But it's very important.
Is there anything that you can think of that you say to students that you work with that jumps to your mind?
You mean one particular thing about
art? Yeah, sir.
You know, I want them to have an appreciation and not to have a set idea on what art is. And
right.
to, you know, because many of the students I teach are not going to be going into
right.
the art world.
Uh-huh.
But I want them to be able to walk into a museum or a gallery or just see a piece of art and not make some prejudgment about
right.
whether it's, you know, good or bad, or that, like you said earlier, that I could do that.
Oh, I could have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to be open.
To be, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. To
yeah.
be open.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. And thank you, folks, for listening. We hope to see you again for lunch again next Friday on the radio at 12:30. And once again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM. It's Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.